Yo, 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 what is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the Just Leave Roadshow presented by Winject Studios with Black Label Nash. Steve always tries to mess up my intro, but you can't mess up a legend, bro. It can't happen.
That's true.
Just can't
do it. I always try to politely wait, and then I'm like, ow, ow.
Heroes are remembered, and legends never die, Chris.
That's right.
That's right. What they say in The Sandlot, anyway.
Yeah, well, I love that. That's another great movie.
Also a great movie.
I actually did watch that.
Killing me. You're killing me, Smalls.
Steve had a day where he was like, we need to watch two movies that you need to just see that you haven't seen yet. So one of them was The Sandlot, and then the other one was The Goonies. And The Goonies.
Hey, you guys.
Hey, you guys.
I couldn't do it. I actually
met someone who looked like him. Anyway.
Oh, no. I couldn't do it. I was telling Steve the whole time, I'm like, I'm dying out here. I can't watch this.
She hated The Goonies.
The Sandlot was cute. It was cute. It was like a classic. What was it, 80s?
It was funny because like the part where he goes, you're killing me, Smalls. She goes, wait a minute. Did that come from this movie?
I really didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a great movie. That's a classic.
It is a classic. Any of the Jet Rodriguez.
I haven't watched any baseball movies that I normally will watch when baseball season comes out.
Yeah.
And I love baseball, but it makes me want a hot dog, like a real good hot dog.
Me too.
And I can't get a good hot dog here because I'm in – like the land of Bill or whatever it's called.
Field of Dreams thing that Major League Baseball did.
Yes, I did. I did watch that. That was great.
How cool is that?
That was really cool. Like, Kevin Costner looks old, by the way.
Well, he is. He's like 97 years old.
I didn't realize he was that old.
He's 97?
I don't know. Hold on a second.
Clint Eastwood is 91. I do know that.
Hey Siri, how old is Kevin Costner? Hold on, Siri's thinking about it. Kevin Costner, oh, he's only 66. So, yeah, he looks pretty bad for being 66.
That was really rude.
I mean, maybe it was just a picture. I don't know. It was the lighting.
It was the picture, yeah, because what I saw of the recap, he looked like he was like 85, 90 years old.
He looked old, man. He looked old.
Wow.
Sorry, Kevin. That's hardcore. I mean, you're a stud.
Yeah, no offense. Sorry. I think it's just whole thing of the pandemic has got these guys where they can't do what they have to normally do to – stay young, right?
I'd be so sad if this whole time he was a fan. You see what I just did?
Yeah, that was good. I was towing the line on that one.
He's like tiptoeing on the tightrope with his little thing, his little bar.
You know?
Dude, I just looked like a velociraptor when I was like tiptoeing on the tightrope. Did you see that?
That was pretty good. I miss you guys. I feel like I haven't seen you. Well, spoken with both of you at the same time in quite a while because we haven't really been recording. I've been really busy with obviously what we got going on. You guys have been really busy with the show dates and all the things that are like, I don't know, what is this thing called now? The Delta Force?
The Delta
Force.
Calling Chuck Norris, the Delta Force has struck again.
What is going on, man? I swear, it's like once you get a little bit of freedom, then they want to shut everything down back again.
So allegedly, the people who don't know how Delta supposedly happened, the people who got vaccinated are shedding the virus off in a different kind of way. So the vaccinated people are spreading this Delta variant to those who haven't been vaccinated and the other people who have been vaccinated.
I mean, that's one of the theories. They haven't technically proven it yet, but
there's no test for it.
I will tell you if that is the case, then that is just.
So thanks.
And a very interesting little flip-flop there.
Flip-flop, flippity-flop.
Flip-flop.
You know what's actually funny to me?
What?
Or maybe it's just because I don't know. I'm not going to get into political conversation, but I'm not trying to, but I'm going to end up doing it anyway. Like Donald Trump, right? And when he was president, he was all over the news.
Yeah.
And this guy, Biden, Sleepy Joe, you don't see anything of him. You don't see any clips.
He's always sleeping in his basement. Dude.
Don't think that that's like not strategic.
I don't see anything, especially here in the UK.
They know that anything that they show him in, he's going to look like a freaking idiot. So they try not to have him like in the limelight all the time because he's there. They have to hide the fact that he's literally like almost dead.
Have you guys ever seen, have you ever been to Madame Tussauds wax museum?
No,
no,
I've but that would be pretty cool.
That's what he reminds me of, is one of those wax figures because he comes up and he's always like, just his eyes move. And when you walk in those wax museum, it seems that their eyes follow you and that's about it. So anyway, Manager's cutting that conversation off right here, guys. Race and religion, wrestling and politics. For right now, we got to not talk about any of those.
So what are we talking about today so Jessie doesn't fall asleep?
Well, listen, I made her sleepy. I'm going manager, and she's like,
oh, I said sleepy Joe. She's like, that's like a word for her. She was just let everyone know she was actually trigger. Yeah.
It's my trigger word. Don't like, say that. I'll literally sleepy Joe. She goes narcolepsy right here.
We actually have the back of her hair tied to her chair so she doesn't hit her face.
That's great.
So today we wanted to discuss the state of the music industry, which kind of leads into what we're doing, Chris, which we can't tell people just yet. But we really wanted to discuss how hard it is for artists to really truthfully be their authentic selves in the music industry because of all of the things that they have to deal with as independent artists and then even as major label artists. Mm-hmm. So, man, where do we start on that?
That's a lot of information because I had someone that I was on my calendar and I was triple booked that one day. And then you had an opportunity to meet them. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what I'm talking about? And they were claiming to be somebody that they weren't.
Oh my
and,
God. You know what I mean? Off so bad. I mean, that's a perfect example. I mean, that's actually a great way to
that
start
is a
because,
great example.
You know, we're not going to drop any names, but we were introduced to someone like Chris had said, he needed us to go ahead. Well, not me. He was Steve, but I happened to be in the car at the time. We were traveling to go do something else. I think we're actually traveling to go to the gym or something, but something like that. I don't remember exactly, but
a great workout was that.
But meanwhile, this guy that we're talking to is claiming that he's doing all of these things. And the first thing I think of is I'm going to do a little information. Cause it's just, some of the things that he's saying really just kind of doesn't add up. And he had these excuses as to why he isn't even, what did he say? He wasn't doing the music industry anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, which is which is a weird thing to me because if you have all this success, right? Like if you just got like all of these streams and these video views, and you're having all the success, like you want to capitalize on that. Any normal person that's doing music isn't, especially as an indie, isn't going to be like, I hit a million streams. Let's just stop here because a million streams equates to like $3,500 anyway. So it's like, you know, financially it doesn't make sense. Momentum wise, it doesn't make sense. So it seemed odd. Started doing a little research on him and realized that my numbers vastly surpassed his in a lot of ways. And he was almost unfindable on the internet, which means when you're going and you're looking for something, we actually had a conversation about this. Remember how you said when you search my name and now the roadshow pops up because it's becoming a popular looked for thing, but it's also equated to my name. So we started looking for this guy on Spotify. We couldn't even find him. Like we literally had to search the exact song that hit a million views and his name and other information, finally found the guy. And his profile didn't even match up. His monthly listenership was like 500 people or something like that, which makes no sense to equate to a million streams unless you literally went and bought those or purchased those. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a great place to start because streaming in a way has ruined the most important part of what you need to do as an artist and the music industry in general, which is gain true fans. And have true supporters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, true supporters behind you. And people have become so consumed with these numbers, they're willing to just fake numbers and pay for streams. Half of the time, they're paying for streams and they're literally paying back the small amount of money they'd be getting anyway. And it's literally just to create this facade of them having these numbers. And the problem is that people, the industry can not only see through that, but when you have a case, like what was that one band that they bought it all those streams and then they went to go sell a show out
And no one showed up.
Well, it was like two people.
Let's back up here, because when I want to go back to when, and I know who you're talking about. I don't want to name their name.
No, don't name the band's name. I meant, you know, well, I wanted you to just like chime in.
Here's an example.
We were just trying to like get you in the episode, Steve.
All I'm saying is I was letting Jessely talk because she was making some good points. But so
only some.
There's a great example of this in the sense that just a few. There's a great example of this when we went to play Eddie's Attic. We use this example all the time. There was an artist that was there the day before, Jessely, and she had streamed her song 7 million times on Spotify and sold 30 less tickets than Jessely, who had only streamed her song
1,000
times.
Yeah. Right?
So that it doesn't matter really. It's the consumption from people who are actually going to consume other parts. And I made this point earlier. People forget in the music industry that it's a business, right? And so really, if you get 100 people to spend $1,000, you make $100,000. Or if you have 1,000 people to spend $100, you make $100,000.
Right.
It's really, the numbers aren't that big. So if you want to make $1,000,000, all you got to do is get 10,000 people to spend $100, right? And so that's good math. Yeah, that's right. That's correct
pretty good
math. Thanks. So, but my point
or
is 10, like,
or
5,000 people to spend $200.
Right.
Which isn't really that hard. And so people forget that though. So let's back up. I'm going to go, back to when I was an artist back in the early 2000s. Okay. That shows the white in my beard now. It used to be that if you were going to get fans, you had to go play music live. You had to tour. You had to go play music live.
There was no social media like that at that time. And
people would actually
sell. There was no internet.
They would sell. There wasn't. To be honest with you, like when
I know, man. You remember that? Yeah. Going online.
Yeah. LimeWire is what it was called, buddy. When people started stealing music. The problem.
Oh, I remember I stole the whole Stain CD. That was like during that time. Yeah, that was great. That was LimeWire.
It dates back to LimeWire is the problem. Anyways. If the music industry had adopted that technology and actually utilized it for good, that we wouldn't be sitting here right now.
Right.
But now we're in a situation to where if somebody streams 1,000,000 times on a song, they only make $3,500 on Spotify. 1,000,000 times. So think about what that
the
does.
Writers get even less now.
I was going to say, I literally was.
Can you clarify? Sorry, let me cut you off. Can you clarify just for the listeners what actually counts as a stream?
It's more than 45 seconds of a track. Or actually, now it's more than a minute and a half of the track. It's more than 90 seconds. So you have to listen to the song 90 seconds. That's why you can go to iTunes and listen to such a long preview of the song. That doesn't count as a stream. It counts as just a preview, so they don't have to pay for it.
Which is such a gem, because like I write 2 minute and 30 second songs. Yeah. It's like you can hear half of the song for free and not even, it's just ridiculous.
So my point is like, think about the songwriters who are actually a completely different breed in this town.
What counts as a stream or a view on YouTube?
I believe it's the same. I believe it's a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. And YouTube.
I'm curious here.
YouTube and Spotify have gotten to where they can log your IP address, and that those streams from the same IP address don't count toward your stream count total.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
So they're not paying the same person for streaming the song over and over and over and over and over and over and over again,
right?
Mm-hmm. Unless it's spread out across the whole day with time in between itself. So,
which is like so interesting to me though, because there was times I remember when I was there for a small period of time where I could go into a FI or FYE or whatever you want to call it and go actually get a physical CD. And I did that with the Pink CD. And there was a song that I loved on it so much. And I would literally play it back to back to back. So there's people that do that if they have a song on repeat. Why doesn't that count? You know what I mean?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
I think it should if you're listening to the whole song.
Right. So I agree.
Let's back up to this whole streaming thing, because that's $3,500 made total off the song, right? Mm-hmm. So typically, it used to be back in the day that songwriters, they still get 9 cents per sale on a track. But what they get off of a stream is about 1/10 of that. So they're going to get, 0.09 cents or whatever it is. So it's ridiculous. So songwriters, like hit songwriters, are in a position where they have to stream a song. I know a guy who had a song streamed 35 million times and got a $135 check. 35 million times.
The crazy part was, is that being a writer in the music industry before, when it was like actually physical album sales, you would get paid.
Right.
Like being the writer was the way to go. Like if you wanted to make because money they would, in this industry, it was being a writer, not the artist.
Well, think about
especially in country music, they would they had a person in mind that they wanted to sing the song.
Yeah. Well, well, it's still kind of that way. Like when an artist writes something, sometimes they're writing it even with that artist now, because the artist also knows that like you want to be, you want to have your hands in everything to make money in this industry now. So a lot of artists are getting into those rights. And even back, it's still kind of the same thing to where there's writers that get together and they write a song and they're writing it to pitch it to someone. So there's definitely still that, mindset.
See, that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Think about this for just a minute, though. Back in the day, if you sold a million tracks, a million songs, you made $90,000.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Now, as a songwriter, you're probably going to make about $90. Mm-hmm. And so the difference between the two is ridiculous. So, you know, the problem with the music industry is that they've made it to where music has become the disposable commodity of the music industry.
Exactly.
And like when I was a kid, if I wanted to, you know, when I was a kid and Journey was popular, you know, like I'd have to go into a Turtles and I'd have to flip through the tapes because they didn't have CDs out yet. I'd flip through the tapes to see if they had Journey Escape. And if they didn't, tough titty, said the kitty when the milk ran dry. I just didn't get to have the record. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That was it. I didn't get to have Journey Escape. And so the problem is,
I'm sorry. People came running in with one of Steve's socks.
And she's a sock thief.
It's like she doesn't steal bras, she doesn't steal shoes,
she doesn't socks.
She literally like goes on a hunt and finds Steve's socks. I don't know how she comes running in with Steve's socks all the time.
Anyway, so you'd have to go into Turtles, you have to you'd have to flip through all the things, and if they didn't have it, that was it. You just didn't have it.
Do you remember like they set the tapes and they had the plastic of the tape and it was so long?
And it was like this long and they had to use a key to get it out. Mm-hmm. It was part of an experience though. You know, it's like you went in and you're like, oh, there it comes, coming out of the plastic, it's going home with me. Let's go put it in the tape player or the CD player.
Yeah.
But now it's kids are like, oh, I want to hear Drake. And then they go to Spotify and it's either free or it's $9 a month, which would typically be like what a cheap CD was back in the day. And they get whatever they want anytime they want. And so this,
which I think, you know, there's good things and bad things about that. You know, like, can you hear Capo in the back drinking?
I can hear Capo drinking. It's like Capo's thirsty.
My God.
She's on another level today. Sorry, everybody. This turned into an ASMR video.
Like it's kind of like one of the sounds that you hear. And if you listen hard enough, you're like, what is that sound?
What the hell's happening?
Is it a waterfall going on? Like, what's happening?
But everything, you know, everything needs to grow and evolve. And like my whole thing with Spotify or any of them to be exact, because it's all of them, Apple Music, Spotify, Deezer, whatever. It's the fact that they're truly underpaying the people that are making the money. Mm-hmm. We are the reason. Anybody who's a content creator is the reason they are here. So to completely devalue the entire, you know, just music in general, what is basically creating their entire platform. You know, it's just unreal to me. You know, even with social media, it's the same way. Without the content creators, they would be nothing. Their platform would not have grown into what it's grown into. All of those social media platforms, TikTok, everything. So for them to not be able to.
Do you like TikTok?
It's hard.
I think it's ran its course.
It's hard for me to like, personally. And I'm not going to name any names. There's a lot of people, artists that are getting signed because of their TikTok. And then they're not able to translate that into anything after their career. So when you go and you see a lot of these artists, I've maybe seen one artist that actually did okay after TikTok, after signing their deal. There's a few country artists out here that have done the same thing that because they've blown up on TikTok and then they can't get a radio hit or they can't chart or they can't sell tickets. So I think it's cool if you're going to go on there and for like finding fun content and stuff, but to actually turn that into looking into someone and seeing them as a viable business, I think it's overrated. I think it's kind of honestly careless. Like, so, as an A&R person, there's no way as an A&R person that I would go and I would sign someone because of their TikTok or one viral moment. I mean, you have to be able to prove that you have continual momentum. There's another girl out there. I'm not going to name her name, but she had this crazy video that blew up and got like 64 million views recently on Facebook and was signed. And to this day, she's not doing anything.
She had one graveyard. Yeah.
Yeah. She had one viral moment. And if you can't show that you can turn that into something else and keep the momentum going in a way mm-hmm. that you're able to remain relevant. And it's not always about remaining, like not always about continuing getting viral moments, because it's not everybody. It has that type of platform to where they can continue having viral moment after viral moment after viral moment. That's really far few in between, but you know, but to be able to take that and turn it into something and keep your business going, because it's you can't keep chasing those viral moments. You know,
you can if you learn how to leverage it right. Mm-hmm. There's a guy that I haven't met just yet. We've been going back and forth. His video, I think I tagged you, Steve, in it. He had a pretty good song. It's a catchy song. His friends got him on a radio.
Yeah.
And they filmed it in the car while he was riding. I can't remember this guy's name, and it's driving me insane right now. It starts with a J. Yeah, that's right, Capo. But she's crying because I couldn't figure the name out. She's a co-host now for the show. Anyways, they were in a car, and I guess it was on GoPro. I mean, whatever it was, it was filming them, and it watched his reaction of them saying the name, and they played the song. He went nuts on Instagram.
Really?
And I was catching him when he was like 5,000 followers, and he's got to be over like 500 something thousand followers now, and it's changed his life. And his blue tick happened. It's changed everything, and now he's selling tickets, and he's obviously his album. Granted, he's a good artist.
Yeah.
But I reached out to him, and he was like, I set up a meeting with his. That's why I need to have a conversation with Steve about this. There's a lot of different ways that you can leverage and knowing how to leverage these platforms to gain more streams. Jadakiss, perfect example. He was on the battle with Dipset, and he went off.
Yeah.
He went off in New York, and his streams went up 200% the next day. I've always been a Jadakiss fan, but anyways, it's funny how you can leverage certain things, and it's a compound effect.
The problem is not getting the numbers initially. Like, getting the numbers initially on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok is easy. That's not the hard part. The hard part is actually making sure that those numbers are monetized afterwards. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm letting you guys talk is because Jessely sounds like a manager here, because she's incredibly smart. She's really, really smart, and what she's learned since she's been in town watching this stuff happen, because it's a cycle. And the fact of the matter is, nobody has broken off of TikTok. Nobody has. And they have a viral moment. Not to
superstardom level, no.
I'm talking about breaking, period.
Yeah.
Like, you can have a hit song, but that doesn't mean you broke. I mean, there's a lot of one hit wonders who had hit songs but aren't stars.
That's true.
And so the fact of the matter is, that's what happens. Chris, I'm going to ask you a question, a business question, okay? Because that's what this boils down to. If you had the opportunity to invest in a business, okay, mm-hmm. and you knew that the business could potentially make you money back, right? But that you had to spend money from your business so you didn't have to give it up in taxes. Right? Mm-hmm. Would you buy that business on the potential that it might make its money back? Or the worst case scenario is that you would lose the money you invested and be able to write that off?
It's a great question. I would look at the distribution channels and how I can make sure that I'm protect my investment first before I would even negotiate it.
Right. So that what happens a lot here is that people will get deals. They will get deals of some sort because the attitude is, well, shoot, if we can make our money back, that's awesome. we'll utilize this moment here. We might make a little bit of money on it. We might make some money on it. But the artist, this is what I was talking about earlier, the artist is doomed to failure because typically the artist has to give away 85 to 90% of the revenue that they're generating from a record deal, right? Because they're having to give it away to the record label.
And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they have nothing else to prove besides that viral moment.
That's right. And so they can't back it up.
Yeah, but you also, but there's one question that you didn't frame in it. Do I believe in it? That's one metric. Always, do I believe in it? And how many lives can it change potentially?
Right.
Well, that's,
those are the two bigger factors for me. And then because your human brain cannot allow you to go all in on something unless it goes all the way down deep inside of what you're passionate about and your values and principles.
Right. Unless it aligns with your mission.
Right. Exactly.
That is the problem now with the music industry though.
Yes.
Because.
Well, not everybody thinks like you, Chris.
Yeah.
That's the point we're trying to make. Well,
I mean, I know that. I mean, I'm just kidding. It was funny.
The problem with the music industry now is the fact that people are scared because they're operating on
scarcity lines. Mindset.
Yeah. They're operating on lines that are this thin. And so if they screw up and sign the wrong person or they do the wrong project, they'll lose their job.
Yeah.
End of story. They'll just lose their job. And so it's like, you know, it's really hard for people to stand behind you when they're trying to preserve themselves. They're trying to preserve their own, you know, viability within that company. And so what's happened now is a lot of people who deserve to get record deals don't, because, you know, the talent is overlooked. It's all about, okay, can I protect my own ass? Because if I screw up, then my job is gone, or the record label might go under because we don't have enough money to survive. Mm-hmm. And that is a direct correlation to what's been caused by the degradation of music and content, like not creation, but consumption.
That's right, Capo.
You know, content consumption.
She's in it today.
Content consumption has just, it's turned into something that content's been disposable, and that's why people have to turn it out so quick.
Right.
As an independent artist, you're told you have to release a single every 6 weeks.
To stay relevant
on Spotify.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, confirming to make the music disposable.
So
you know, it's all you have part to of that be, process.
That's what I was telling you about the roadshow. The whole ideology behind the roadshow was bringing something different to the marketplace potentially and seeing you in a different view.
Right.
And it does help you stay relevant when you are working on a deal potentially or working on some music, because you will stay in that algorithm of like right now. The reason why the roadshow pops up the same time your name when you type in Jess Lee, like it's got, have you ever paid attention to how many clicks and how many letters it takes for your name to pop up?
Yeah. And I think if I, and correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't that change for everybody's phone, like their user experience?
There it is.
Because it's all I have to type in is JES and it starts to pops up. Since the roadshow,
before I would get that chick from Taiwan or whatever she was from.
Oh, the Asian.
I don't know. Jessie? I mean, I think she has a pretty voice, but I don't know her. But
she sings in Mandarin, so.
Yeah, I don't know, but she has a pretty voice. I mean, I don't know what the hell she's saying, but.
Yeah, exactly.
That's another point. You know, we have a lot of listeners that tune in from Turkey, tune in from whatever the hell it was. I think it was some ass country. It was some other country. I don't know what it was, but I was like, they don't speak English there. Like, what happened? Anyways.
So,
but thanks, guys.
Where I was getting at with this is an artist now to hit Spotify's algorithms has to spend about $26,000 a year to make their music, right? Because an average cost is about $2,500 to $3,000 per track if you're going to do it at a high level.
Right.
So you're talking about $26,000. You have to
stream. $26,000.
You have to stream 7.4 million times on your tracks to make your money back. 7.4 million times. And the average artist never breaks 10,000 streams on a song.
The average indie
artist.
Some even major label. Like I even had a major label friend that they just weren't paying attention to him. And his latest single just flopped, like literally didn't even get past like 10,000 streams, and you're a major label artist. It doesn't make any sense. So, you know, it's, but yeah,
well, I think they bury the record. It same thing happened to LL Cool J with, when Jay-Z was running, obviously Def Jam, right? And we took over Def Jam.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His album, he was getting a lot of coverage, and LL Cool J's album just pretty much got shelved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he got pissed.
I mean, that's the problem is like this music industry, they say stream. It's important to have numbers on Spotify. But can you
sell out an arena?
Yeah. I mean, like there's going to be people.
Well, not even an arena. I mean, there's artists that are having spectacular careers. We did the math. Okay. For instance, rock is a dying breed, right? It's kind of died. It's the way that it is. Rock was a dying breed for a while. But there's a lot of artists out there. We're talking about the places that I'm going to play these theaters. And Steve and I were doing the math of, we saw Hinder was there. And he's like, oh, if Hinder's there, they did Lips of an Angel.
I love that song. Such a good song.
They're probably doing theaters around 1,000 to 1,200, maybe 2,000 seats. So let's do the math here. This is the proof of, if you can just even develop a strong theater audience and a true fan base outside of streaming, this is the kind of money you can make. So go ahead, Steve.
So let's take 2,000 seats. Okay. I have my calculator out because I'm not that great at math.
I whipped it out.
Let's say $40
ticket. When in doubt, whip it out.
Let's say a $40 ticket. Okay. Typically at a venue like that, at a theater, you're going to have to split 85%. You get 85, the house gets the other 15. Okay. Cause that's typically the split, cause they have to cover their costs.
Right.
So you're going to come home as a band with about $68,000 just from ticket sales. Okay.
That's one show.
Right. So $68,000 times 100, which is a pretty
normal tour schedule.
That's a normal tour schedule. You're making $6.8 million pre-expenses. And that is if you're just playing very, very, very small venues. You're talking about 2,000 seats.
That's not counting merch.
That's no merch. That's not any streaming revenue. That's nothing. That is literally just tickets. So if you can sell out 2,000 seats, like that's really not that much. You're not talking arenas. You're not talking football stadiums. You're not talking getting guarantees of several hundred thousand dollars. You're talking selling tickets.
The problem is, though, is that these TikTok stars aren't even coming close to doing that.
Or these
major label artists that are just getting thrown onto these huge editorial playlists, and they're not building true fan bases.
But it's the same as these Instagram models who are showing their boobies off to everybody and then wondering why they can't get boyfriends. You're already getting the milk for free. Why do you got to own the cow? You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You can go listen to the music whenever you want to for free, basically. So why would you go see them live when you can sit in your underwear on your recliner at home and listen to Spotify all night?
It's true.
And they're giving it away. They're giving away the music industry, and they're wondering why they're getting ready to all lose their jobs. And it's because they can't monetize the people who are actually creating the content. And if you can tell I'm getting fired up because the fact of the matter is the music industry is screwing themselves, and they don't even really take us. It's like when you're in a relationship with somebody and you're being an asshole and you don't realize you're being an asshole and you don't take time to step back and realize what you're doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then it's too late because your girlfriend walks out the door because you were an asshole and you know what I mean? And then you try and blame her and then you have an epiphany. That was my fault. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what's happening and that's what's going to happen. And if the course doesn't change the next 3 to 4 years, record labels will become obsolete unless they start focusing on other ways to develop artists' infrastructure other than music.
I have a question.
Yes.
A playlist.
Yeah.
I see a lot of this bullshit getting on playlists, and I even get emails. I'm not even a damn artist, and I'm starting to get them because obviously we're attached to the show. They're like, right. Oh, we'll put you in a playlist. I'm like, motherfucker, do you see? I have a microphone, but I don't sing in that shit. Yeah. Like you asked me to sing, it'd be some dogs and shit. playlist. So like relevant playlist. I do see the ones that are relevant and they are real, but you see the bullshit playlist.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's coming, and that ties back into the first comment we made about the example we used with a guy pretending to be whatever he was.
Yeah.
I see a lot of this with playlists. Can you walk the listeners through what does it actually take to get your song listed on one of those?
The big playlists, the Spotify playlist, let's say Hot Country. Let's take that for example. That's if you one. Land on Hot Country, right? Yeah, it's a great thing to be on Hot Country. But the fact of the matter is a lot of those playlists are consumed by people who are specifically just going to Spotify and choosing the first playlist they can find in a particular genre. So a lot of those streams are what I call passive streams from passive fans, meaning you're playing, you're getting streamed a whole lot, but it's like in a doctor's office, or it's like by people just listening to music on the way to work and not trying to discover new music or trying to consume.
That's how I find new music is through playlists, yes.
Right. So a lot of times people will just turn it on and passively listen, meaning like they're not even trying to understand what the song is or who the artist is. It's just on in the background.
Right.
At a bar, you know, because they can put that on at a bar and it's really easy, or, you know, whatever. And so the problem with big playlists is big playlists don't necessarily equate to fans. And fans are actually what bring you the money. Like I said earlier, if you have 1,000 fans that spend $100, you make $100,000 as an artist.
Yeah. Mm.
But if you have 7 million people that stream your song 7 million times, guess what you get? You get what? Times 3,500. You get $24,000. Well, that's how much you generate off your streaming, right? So if all 7 million of those people stream your song and you get 7 million streams, you get $24,000, you know? So think about those numbers for a minute. 7 million people give you a quarter of what 1,000 people could give you, right? That are decently engaged. And so the problem is people are, they're chasing digital all the time. They're chasing these numbers to show their viability. But what they don't see is they don't see the viability in the actual live act themselves. There's certain acts I know, dude, that I can name you 5 artists right now that play in Texas that you've never heard of.
Yeah.
That could sell out an arena in Texas.
Oh, I believe it, because I've lived in Austin, and these guys, you would see them in like hole in the walls. Yeah. And they are tearing it up. I'm like, who are these people?
They're crushing. But if they came here, nobody would know who they were. And they might have 2, 3, 4 million streams on Spotify, but they could sell out a 30,000 seat arena in Texas.
Right.
There's a like good that. Movie, real good independent movie. I can't remember the name of it, but it was really good. It was about a guy, and he was in Texas, and he went with Willie, and he went on a road, and he was a really good writer, and he, you know, of course, he's an alcoholic. But that type of person is what you're talking about. These guys or gals can sell out arenas, and they have ambassadorship. And Jess Lee mentioned that in the beginning. If you have real fans, like real people, not bots and bullshit. Yeah, there's some obviously ways that you can trick an algorithm to get you seen because of what they're doing. And people don't realize this, even social media. People don't realize, and this is why I own an engagement group. People don't realize the amount of pressure that's keeping you not seen. I have friends that were following me on social media and never see my post.
Right. Yeah.
Because you're getting put right when you start changing the narrative of that industry, they'll start suppressing your numbers.
Oh, for sure. And it does. That makes it harder. But, you know, when it comes to the whole streaming game, it's one of the things that bothers me the most is people that like invest the wrong way. There's nothing wrong with like any job or any career investing in it and spending money on marketing, but going and botting your stuff with fake listeners or people,
it's not going to work for you.
It's not going to do anything in the long run. There's going to be nothing that comes from that. It's just going to be you temporarily appeasing yourself because it looks like you have a good number, but in the long run, it's doing more damage because you're spending all this unnecessary money and you're not creating true supporters behind you.
It's people forget that this is the music business.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And you have to.
Everything's a business. People are stupid. They don't realize that everything's a business. Everything is a business. If you look at it as a business, you'll always make money.
Right, you have to build an infrastructure. You just have to. It's like if I were going to open a pizza restaurant, I'd have to build an infrastructure of customers before so I could sell pizza. It's the same thing with selling Jess Lee's brand. I'm not going to say selling Jess Lee because
but it's just talking about thing. That earlier. Like,
I am worth $5,000.
It's $5,000 for Jess Lee. But it's like, it's the same thing with selling Jess Lee as a brand. you have to market it properly. You have to actually cast the net wide enough that you're going to get 1 in 10 customers to actually move to spend money.
You got to pass the visual test. And I was screaming this to people. I don't like the little rights reserve, and Jess Lee has it and isn't just like the little right thing next to your name. It's the level of professionalism of passing the visual test.
Right.
Once you pass that visual test, then they'll actually pay attention to you. And then from there, they're not going to pay attention to you. They're going to see how many people are paying attention to you. You have to make it popular for people to want to view you.
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But my question is, you know, going into the streams and going into the numbers and analytics, because that's where I love and I live, like podcasting, I can go into, we have obviously our team that updates it once a week. And the reason why we only do it once a week is because the numbers, it's just too confusing. You got to have enough data there to be able to make the right adjustments. Like for podcasting, we know how many, like the average listener would listen to where it stops. And this is why we've gotten to a point in our episodes where we don't do typically more than around 48 minutes to 63 minutes.
Right.
If you go in my show, but then in my show, that's an interview style show. If it's a third person thing, that's the sweet spot, 45 to 63 minutes.
Right.
Past that 63 minute mark, the numbers decline.
Yeah. So, I think people's attention spans.
Well, yes, also, I think the reason why the average, I think it's around 79%, but an average podcast, you would typically get around like 63. The win-win effect's crazy. I get over 94% completion of episodes. People listen to the whole thing.
That's amazing.
Love that.
And it's amazing. But my question is this: when it comes to streams, can you look that far down to the analytic on what is the average consumption of each song?
No, Spotify doesn't want you to know it.
Of course not.
They don't because they don't want you to know how their algorithm works. You know what I mean? Because
what you could do, here's my point. What you could do, YouTube is phenomenal. Okay. So say for instance, if we did like a ghost type of run and no marketing, no nothing, posting a song, you can go into the analytics and see the spikes of the favorite parts of that song, where they rewind it, where they send it.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, you can actually see how they can.
This is how I test the accuracy of numbers of these fucking platforms that lie. I look at, okay, when you're depending on what you look at in numbers. I have a guy, Phil Faluca. He was on. He's sold 2 podcasting networks. He takes people from a show and turns them to mainstream. And he's obviously we're working at a partnership on the back end of Winjet. And the reason why I bring him up, it's like he has the same view. I think it's what episode 116 came out. Anyways, so I think it was just this past Monday. It's blowing up streams. It's ambassadorship. You Google him right now, you'll see him playing soccer, well, football. Mm-hmm. But he's not known as that, but he's known as the guy behind people pushing him and putting and taking them mainstream. The reason why I bring that up, I mentioned that to him and he's like, fuck, dude, I haven't thought about that. That's a really good way of testing the market and seeing, okay, and that might be something you can do unlisted. So like a new stream or a new music comes out, I would propose doing an unlisted or a private link, sending it off to like we have exclusive content, right? Early access to episodes. So if anybody's watching this and you want to watch this episode early, I mean, you're going to start seeing it and you can go there. But testing it out, maybe sending it within the community and testing the engagement of it. And that might be a way. That might be a way to we can flip the algorithm and dumping in distribution and marketing on the ad spin on the back of it.
It would be interesting.
Sorry, my mind works this way, but
it would be interesting to see how that would work. You know, ultimately the problem with giving it away to an entire
No. I'm talking about like doing it like a giveaway type of thing.
Yeah,
but, I get it. But strategically giving away to like 10 people.
Yeah, I understand.
You're testing. What you're saying. Yeah.
So if you use a test market, yeah, I understand that. So for us, it's like what you're saying, coming up with these existing things that we can then try and utilize to be able to understand the best way of which we can build infrastructure underneath artists and not having to fully rely on the machine when the machine is wildly unreliable and you don't even know what the machine cogs look like on the inside, because
she's a girl you meet in a bar. It's not going to be, it's not going to work out.
Ultimately, you know, Spotify is and Apple Music, their algorithms, they won't tell you what they are, because if they told you even one piece of it, you could reverse engineer the rest of it. And then
this is where I live.
Yeah.
You know, then, like, this is how I figure things out. I look, well, I'm a good friend of mine. I think I introduced you, Taraji. She's an engineer mindset. Yeah. I look at things backwards. We engineers look at it backwards. That's it.
You find one piece, one answer, and then you can go backwards.
Yeah.
And that's what they don't want you to do, because if you do that, then you own the platform, you know?
Wait, was it Jack Nicholson that waited to get a load of me?
Yeah.
Oh man. It's going to, you know what? So say, for instance, if you as a manager, put your manager hat on just for a second. If you had an artist come to you and you're starting to get a lot of people obviously come to you, and it's obviously not going to pigeonhole you, because obviously for the next episode coming out. But when they're looking for a manager, and how do you kind of get around that? Because you mentioned so much on this episode, and it's almost to the point to where if I was a consumer and I was listening to this, it would actually push me away on actually really wanting to be an artist.
Well, that's the thing is artists should.
Or is that the point? Or is that the point and a reason why they do it this way?
Kind of. I mean, the fact of the matter is artists, it used to be that there was barriers for entry into the music industry.
I was just going to say, there's so much saturation now with bullshit. I mean, people that should never be putting out music, and I'm not trying to be a jerk saying that,
it's 100%
true. Anybody and their mom can go in their basement and literally go sign up for CD Baby and have their music distributed to all these platforms now. We're back when the way it used to be was you legitimately had to be signed to a label. Like, you had to be signed, and you had to go through a process, and the only people that had the ability to really financially be able to distribute these projects, because they were all physical, even early in streaming, it was nearly impossible in the beginning for indie artists to do it on their own. But it's, you know, there's no barrier for entry now. They've made it to where anybody can. And there's something beautiful about that, because like America, you know, like America. There's something beautiful about that. But at the same time, it's unbearably frustrating for artists like me and even major label artists out there, because it's like, There's just some people out there that should not be doing music.
Here's the thing. I don't want to go ahead, Chris. And then I'll make my last point.
No, it's fine. Go ahead. Mine's going to be a loop back point, but go ahead.
My last point I want to make is, if you're an artist and your first idea of making art is that you want to make money with it, then you should just stop right now. If you want to be famous, cut it out.
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is, if you're making art for the wrong reasons, then you're never going to break through. You have to be authentic to your message and to your people. And you have to be authentic as an artist. And so if you come in saying, I'm going to be rich and famous, get the hell out of here. Because you know, the people who don't care, the people who want to build themselves as their artistry, the business will come if you build your artistry the right way, and your fans will come because they're going to see that you're authentic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it will happen in a way that's organic. You can't force connection. Like, you know, Bonnie Raitt said it best. I can't make you love me if you don't.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's great.
I can't make you love me if you don't. And the fact of the matter is,
All right, it's all in my head.
Yeah. You can't make people love you if you're not authentic. Jessely wouldn't love me if I wasn't authentic with her every day.
It's touch points, consistency.
It's consistency with your people and your audience and your message, period. And so I have a question, just real quick on this.
What are two surefire ways to get someone's attention in the music industry?
Be real, first of all, and don't suck.
Mm-hmm. I mean, authenticity is a huge part of it, because the most important thing that you can offer is being your true self.
For me.
I think so, because no one's going to be able to offer quite what you're going to be able to. If you're trying to mimic someone else, then that's already been created. You know, one of the biggest things we try to stand away from is when someone asks, which I think is the stupidest question, when they're like, who are you like? Like,
and, oh my God, I'm like me, mother.
Not like anybody.
Yeah. Right. And that's, and it's funny, because it's like, well, I mean, obviously sound copies. There's only so many notes in music in general. So sound is going to copy each other in some sort of way, mm-hmm. you know, but ideally, but it's like, if you should be your own person, you should have your own sound, you should have your own message. Right. And you know, I always try to stray away from being like, well, I'm like this artist, because in reality, I'm really not like any
people
artist.
Ask me that. People ask me they would see me on obviously the show, right? Mm-hmm. And they're seeing me in a different light. So they really enjoy the show. There's a lot of people love the show and right. they really truly listen to it. And that's where we obviously seen the numbers, because it's proven the point of the idea on why it would work, because you're reaching a whole different audience.
Yeah.
But reaching a whole lot. Remember, did you read that book that I asked you to read? The 50 Cent Clarity? Book.
The 50 Cent book.
Yeah, 50, not the 50 Laws of Power. That was one he did with Robert Greene, but he wrote a book. It's like The Hustling, it was Hustle something.
No, I'm starting I did the Seduction one. Remember the one ooh, that you sent that, me?
Yeah, ooh,
yeah, I don't remember this other one, but the Seduction one, I'm already
the 50 Cent one. Maybe I just sent it to Steve, and it taught them, okay, there's two surefire ways when 50 Cent was trying to break out. So what he did is that this is back in the day when they had mixtapes, and he would just go get a bunch of mixtapes, do raps and just shit all over their verse.
Oh, yeah.
And just
yeah.
take it to another level. 50 Cent, and this is how he got shot so many times.
Oh my God.
Seriously, he caused this, oh he gosh. Caused so much like controversy. Like he just went nuts. And yeah. he would just like on it. And he would get on a verse, and like Lil Wayne would drop a verse. He'll get on that beat and destroy it.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one surefire way. The other surefire way back in those times was just showing your ass. And if you were sexy and you were like one of those types of whatever and showing cleavage, going whatever, and just hoeing yourself out pretty much. That's another way. So
well, that hasn't changed much.
So Chris has made up a word too. Cleavage.
Cleavage. That's a new word.
Grover cleavage.
I'm just saying.
That hasn't changed much, you know, but the, yeah, but it only changed. Gets you so far, because then people don't take you seriously.
Yeah. Well, you're getting the milk for free. So why you got to buy the cow?
Mm-hmm.
It's the truth.
So, Chris, what is your tagline that you say all the time? Be
what the end? What I say? Be well. Be you. Be great.
Right. Be you is the most important part.
Be great. I say. Well, that goes with everything that I say. I was just talking to Nina Perez about this. A good friend, and she's actually part of the community. She's got a great show. Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. Go listen. She was talking about, it's like, so how I branded myself, and when it came to business, that I was bigger than business, bigger than sales. I was bigger than this. That's how I had to rebrand. So everything that I do within companies is one heartbeat, one mission, one outcome. Towards the end of things, I would say, once you get into that alignment on what you really want in life, and this goes into artists, keep moving, keep growing, keep learning. It's not even mine. Then it ties right back in to be well, be you, be great.
Well,
that's on you to do that, though.
That's the lesson for artists. Is be well with yourself, be you, authentic, and be great at what you do. That's all you have to do. And so you asked me what you should do. Those are the three things. You should listen to Chris Ross and his sign-off line. Be well, be you, be great. Period. End of story.
I have a couple other ones for other people, but I'm not going to say.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. So guys, on behalf of Black Label Nash, Winject Studios, Jesse, and Chris Ross, Chris, give it to him, buddy.
Be well, be you, be great. Peace.
Peace.
This broadcast is brought to you by Winject Studios. We are an all-in-one educational platform for podcasters that revolutionizes how hosts leverage content to increase engagement with listeners, downloads, and income. We come together to focus on community, collaboration, and collective impact. For more information on how you can interact directly with our hosts, access exclusive live content with offers you can't get anywhere else from our official partners, join our purpose-driven community by visiting www.winject.com. If you're ready to build a career doing what you love, then we're ready to see you there.